British Spy Stories, Season 2, The Kill Order. Episode 5. Larivelle sits at a table in the airport, with the remains of a bacon sandwich in front of her. She gulps another mouthful of tea. Her phone is already switched off in her pocket, partly in preparation for the flight, and partly to give herself some breathing space after the past 24 hours. With the constant string of public announcements, she has tuned out of the sounds of passengers and aircraft around her. Then something makes her notice what is coming from the tannoy. Was that her name they mentioned? Her cover name is common enough. She looks around for the information desk and walks over to a small man with a large hat on, who is sitting on a tall stool.
"I'm Sabrina Miller," she says in Russian. "Was that an announcement for me?"
The man frowns at her at first and clicks the screen in front of him with a mouse.
"Miller?"
he says eventually, and she nods.
"Call this number."
He puts a note on the countertop. Larivelle smiles weakly and walks to a bank of isolated seating at one end of the glass and steel building. She holds down the power button to her phone and waits for it to boot up. When it does, she has 3 missed calls from Panama. But the number on the note is not his phone. She punches in the digits from the paper and waits for the line to connect.
"Douglas is Limited."
It's today's shadow greeting. She recites her MI6 password into the phone.
"Larivelle, it's Cabinet Maker. London Control. We've had reports about windfall. I sent in the complete status change earlier," she says. "Coda successfully dispatched."
"There's been an incident on the road, we hear," says Cab.
"What sort of incident?"
"Small arms fire. The vehicle was stopped and the back doors forced."
"Oh, Christ," she says.
"No details beyond that currently. We wanted you to go and have a look."
"What about Panama?"
"We can't contact him," says Cab.
"What do you mean?"
"He's not responding to calls."
"You've tried all channels?"
"Naturally. He's off grid."
Larivelle has no time to think about why he might have done that. Then Cab says,
"It's about a 2-hour drive out of Minsk."
She takes a deep breath out.
"And no more details?"
she says.
"Deaths, injuries?"
"Sorry."
"What was the source of this intel?"
"Satellite," says Cab. "Yanks were observing ops of theirs in the region and spotted the attack."
"You got the video?"
"Sure. Send into your phone now."
A notification arrives and she pulls down the top menu and clicks on a file, then watches an aerial shot of a lorry on a road. 2 cars are chasing it and cutting off its path. Then 4 figures jump out and surround the juggernaut. The quality of the video isn't good enough to see the minutiae of what the attackers do, but she can see the driver being pulled out of the cab and laying on the ground. Then 2 of the attackers go around to the back doors and force them open. 1 disappears inside, and a minute later other figures start to get out of the back. Then the video ends.
"It's all we've got,"
says Cab in the earpiece.
"Okay, let me get out there,"
she says.
"Send me the grid ref."
"Report back soonest, please,"
says Cab.
"Sure."
There is only 1 small gap in the bedroom curtains, but the sun aligns perfectly, and a small spot of bright yellow sits on Ella's face. It gradually moves up towards 1 eye in the course of a few minutes, and the light and the heat suddenly cause her to wake into the cold morning as she opens her eyes. She hasn't been sleeping well since she met Marjorie for lunch. Ella was brought up to be honest, and it is part of her personality that she likes. She wants to have a life based on candor, not veneer. Marjorie's suggestion to suppress her connection to Stefan isn't honest. The thought brings back the feeling in her chest that has been with her for 2 days. not pain, but nerves, that tell her she has to do the right thing, no matter what the consequences. She gets up and makes coffee. The filter machine begins its gurgling serenade, and she goes into the bathroom. She hears a mobile ringing, then realizes it's hers, which is always a surprise, as she so rarely uses her phone as a phone these days. If it does ring, her first thought is always it must be someone else's device, as the ringtone isn't that familiar to her, like the bell on the house phone had been when she was a child. Ella walks to the bedroom. The machine is still warbling on the bedside cabinet, and she reads the screen, but it says number withheld. She picks it up and slides her finger across the glass to answer the call.
Hello?
Ella?
Who's this?
I'm a friend, says the voice at the other end.
Who are you?
I need you to do something for me.
Sorry, look, I need you to find some information,
he says. She is silent, her mind racing through her options and trying to recall her training. Don't speak. Let them talk. I'll send you some details on this number. She waits.
You still there?
She waits.
I was told you'd be expecting my call. No,
she says, then immediately regrets it. Don't engage. Don't engage. Damn it, says the voice at the other end of the line.
Who are you?
The line goes dead. Her heart is beating fast now. The fear that started in her brain traces paths throughout her body until she can feel her eyes water and her hands shake. For all her intelligence, education, and bravado that makes her what she is, right now, in this second of her life, Ella Perez feels utterly alone. Her journey from the airport had started in darkness, but now the hard red dawn stretches out ahead of Laravel. She steers the hire car through the white landscape from the capital city of Belarus towards Poland. The grid reference sent from London is not on the motorway, as she would have expected, but on the outskirts of a town called Baranovichi. The driver must have turned off the direct route and taken a diversion, as she doesn't know why that might be. His instructions were to head direct for the border and get across as soon as he could in the early hours, as the guards would be groggier from their all-night shift and less likely to carry out spot inspections. She turns off the highway into the town. Her sat-nav guides her through a route that skims the outer edges of the built-up area and turns back towards the main road. As the screen in her car shows a few hundred feet from the location, she looks out either side for some sign of the vehicle. Then she sees the dark blue lettering that she had last seen in the loading warehouse. There is no sign of any humans near the lorry. She parks and walks around the vehicle, all the time checking for any movement. She checks to see if the driver is in his cab, but it's empty. Then walks to the back doors, but they are closed. Laravel inspects the seals and they've been broken. One door isn't quite fully closed, though, and she tugs it open, to be met immediately with a handgun pointing at her, which appears through the narrow gap.
It's okay,
she says in Russian to whoever is holding the pistol to her face.
I'm friend.
She holds her palms open to show she is not holding any weapon.
My boyfriend's father is on board. Do you speak English?
She says, then repeats the phrase in Russian and German, and the man seems to understand one of them as he lowers the gun and opens the door further. She grabs the sidebar and hauls herself up. Inside the lorry, the scene looks like something from a disaster movie. The packing cases that hid the passengers have been pulled back to reveal a tiny gap into the inner sanctum where they'd been sitting. One man, who has a red stain on his chest, is lying on the floor, and a woman is holding his hand. She looks up at Larival with a thousand unspoken words on her face.
"Is anyone else injured?"
she says, in her three languages. Someone calls from behind the boxes.
"Yes, one is dead."
"Who?"
she says to the wall of wood.
"The young boy."
"Where's the body?"
"In here."
Larival steps into the gap and sees four people huddled together at the far end. In front of them is the body of Oana's brother. She kneels and checks his pulse, but he is long dead. She looks up and at that moment realizes that Dimitri is not in the lorry.
"Where's the old man?"
she says to the others.
"He ran off,"
says one of the women.
"Where?"
The woman shakes her head.
"Which direction?"
"We don't know. We stayed in here."
"Did the attackers say anything?"
says Larival. But two of the people shake their heads this time. She scrambles out of the trailer and jumps back down to the road, then walks away from the vehicles and makes an encrypted call to London, out of earshot.
"Reporting a misplaced asset?"
she tells the London control desk operator. She goes through what she knows of the events, which is sketchy at best.
"I need a location for asset coder. We chipped his clothing, so you should have at least three signals from the 11-6s,
she says, referring to the 1106 authority to attach a satellite tracking bug to a civilian. London Control promised to patch the 1106 signals into her phone. She ends the call and goes back to see if she can make the injured man any more comfortable in the lorry. A few minutes later, the 1106 signals are patched through to Larival's phone. She stares at the screen, and it shows a pulsing light about a mile away from her current location. She starts to walk across the main road and goes into the woodland that starts immediately at the curbside. Despite the time of year, the trees are still dense, and branches catch her face and pull at her clothing as she negotiates the undergrowth. After 20 minutes, she emerges from the woods, close to a small road with houses spread out along its curving length. She checks the screen, and the light is only 100 yards away now. Larival walks past the first few houses, trying to look like she is visiting a friend. She can see one or two shadowy figures looking out from the safety of their living rooms as she goes by. Number 12 is in the far corner of a cul-de-sac. Like the other houses, it has seen better days. The paint is marked and peeling in some places. The front door was once red but is now muddy brown. Larival steps onto the path from the road. Her phone shows that Coda is inside this building. She knocks lightly on the front door. No response. She knocks again, still nothing. He'll be scared, she has no doubt. She walks along the path in front of a big bay window that shows her the lounge behind it. There's a side gate and she unlatches it. The back garden is overgrown. Maybe the place is abandoned. Larival reaches the back window to the lounge. There are no signs of any activity. She tries the back door, and it's unlocked. She steps inside.
"Dimitri,"
she stage whispers.
"Dimitri."
Silence.
"It's Sabrina."
No movement or sound comes from anywhere around her. She walks through the rooms on the ground floor, but no one is here. Then she hears it, a tiny creak of wood above her head. She starts to ascend the staircase, slowly, not wanting to frighten Coda any more than he is already. Larival listens every few steps. but doesn't hear the noise again. She steps into each of the three bedrooms in turn. Nothing in the first. The second is empty, apart from a broken suitcase. In the third, there's a wardrobe. She draws her weapon, stands back, and pulls the door open, suddenly. She only just manages to catch Dmitri as he falls forwards, out of his hiding place, and into her arms. She staggers back with the weight of the man, then lays him down. There's a wound down one side of his torso. His clothing is torn, revealing damaged flesh. But he's alive. Laravel inspects his body for any other wounds, but there are none. She sits on the floor next to him. After a moment, she pulls out her phone and makes a call.
Laravel asset report,
she says into the device.
Coda located.
Good news, Laravel,
says Cabinet Maker in London Control.
We need an extraction, Cap. One injured civilian asset.
How serious is the injury?
I'd say he can't survive more than 6 to 8 hours in this state.
Okay, Laravel, says Cab. I'll come back to you with the extraction details. Hold.
She can hear muffled conversations.
Sorry, Laravel, they're saying 15 to 17 hours for extraction, but we'll work on it. We can see the grid ref where you are now. Is that the extraction location?
Yeah,
she says.
Quick as you can, Cab. It doesn't look good.
We're on it.
The line goes dead. She leans back against the wall and looks down at Dmitri's pale features and wonders if he will survive the next few hours until he can be picked up and taken to safety.